Before Bob Marley became a symbol, before Peter Tosh became a firebrand, before Bunny Wailer chose silence over stardom, there was us. Three voices, one sound, one power. This isn't the myth. This is the memory of how we turned ghetto pain into prophecy, harmony into revolution, and how Babylon split the sound that once held the world together. We weren't a backing band. We were the front line. We weren't fame chasers. We were truth carriers. We didn't chase spotlight. We lit it ourselves. This is the Wailers, word, sound, and power. The untold story of how our unity shaped the world and how breaking it nearly broke us all. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. Trenchtown Beginnings, three brothers in a broken yard. We weren't born a band. We were born a brotherhood, shaped by zinc fences, dust roads, and the sound of suffering turned into song. You don't just meet your band in Kingston. You survive them. We met in Government Yard, in a neighborhood where your next-door neighbor might be a prophet, a thief, or both. Trenchtown, the place where nothing came easy except pain, and where every voice had to fight through gunshots and empty bellies just to be heard. Bob, Bunny, Peter. We weren't just friends. We were fire looking for rhythm. We had no studios, no money, just one shared hunger to tell the truth and make Babylon listen. Bob was the quiet storm, the one who carried silence like a second skin, always listening, always observing. Bunny was the mystic, reading the Bible under street lamps, seeing symbols in cigarette smoke, always questioning, always deep. Peter was lightning, angry, unapologetic, a man who didn't bend. Not for anyone. His guitar didn't play notes. It cut warnings into the wind. We first harmonized under the same tin roof during a blackout. The city was hot and dark. The only light was from candles and our voices. We started humming, no lyrics yet, just instinct. And that was the moment. That was the birth of the Wailers. No label, no plan, just three boys in a broken yard, creating something sacred. We used to make instruments out of junk. A sardine can for a drum. A broomstick and a wire from a broken fence for a bass line. But even then, the sound was righteous. We weren't trying to be famous. We were trying to survive through song. Trying to take what Babylon threw at us and spit it back in melody. We'd rehearse for hours with no shoes on. Sometimes we'd rehearse on hungry stomachs, drinking boiled bush water to trick our bellies into calm. But when we sang together, the hunger faded. The gunshots outside went quiet, and we became bigger than Trenchtown. It wasn't just music. It was resistance set to harmony. We had dreams. Bob talked about Africa like he'd been there in another life. Bunny believed Zion was a frequency we could reach if we stayed clean. Peter, he wanted to burn the whole Babylon system down, one riff at a time. But we all knew. This bond, this sound, was bigger than any of us alone. Still, even then, we felt the system watching. Even before the first record. Even before Island Records and international flights. Because when three black boys from Trenchtown start singing about truth, about Rasta, about justice, Babylon starts planning how to split the harmony. But in those early days, we didn't know how hard it would get. We only knew one thing. We were the Wailers. And we were going to make the world feel what Jamaica tried to bury. The Wailing Wailers, sound without spotlight. We had the sound, but Babylon had the spotlight. And we were still just shadows fighting to be seen. They called us the Wailing Wailers, but before the name meant anything, it was just us, walking miles across Kingston with sore feet, carrying a sound that no one wanted to pay for. We weren't signed. We weren't booked. We were hungry, and all we had was harmony. Our first rail shot came at Studio One, thanks to Coxone Dodd. The man ran the studio like a plantation, strict, cold, and full of power. But at least he opened the gate. The first time we walked in there, it was like stepping into Zion with wires. One mic, one take, no overdubs, just truth, raw and unfiltered. We didn't even know how to sing properly in front of a mic. We just felt, and sometimes feeling was enough. We dropped Simmer Down, a song we wrote for the youth on the corners with guns tucked in school bags. A warning, a cry, a command, simmer down, oh control your temper. But we weren't just talking to them. We were talking to ourselves, learning to channel our rage into rhythm. The song blew up. number one on the Jamaican charts. Played on every sound system from Kingston to Mobay. But we didn't see a cent. Not even enough for proper shoes. Coxone made the money. We made the music. And every time we asked for payment, we got told we were lucky to even be in the studio. Still, we kept recording. It hurts to be alone. One Love, the early version. Lonesome Feeling. Rude Boy. Each track was a page from our lives. Heartbreak, hunger, hustling, and hope. And when we sang, we weren't harmonizing voices. We were harmonizing wounds. Peter had that fire in his voice, a kind of righteous aggression that burned through every verse. Bunny, he brought the spiritual depth. He carried Africa in his tone, like he'd never forgotten where we came from. Bob was the thread, the one who tied our pain and purpose into melodies that even Babylon couldn't ignore. But still, the industry treated us like stepchildren. No airplay without bribery. No gigs unless you had light skin or knew someone uptown. And we were dread, dark-skinned, Rasta, and unapologetically ghetto. Even our own people sometimes called us too radical. But that was the point. We weren't singing for the ballroom. We were singing for the boys who had to choose between bullets and bread. The music? It wasn't entertainment. It was medicine. Even when we argued, and we did, we never lost that feeling, that conviction, that knowing deep down that we were sent to do this. Some nights we rehearsed in dark alleys, barefoot on concrete, our bellies rumbling louder than the bass. Other nights, we'd cram into a friend's yard and sing until the neighbors stopped complaining and started clapping. We didn't have money, but we had a sound that moved people. We had each other, at least for a while. And we had Jah. The world hadn't noticed us yet. But we knew. We knew it was only a matter of time before the Wailing Wailers would become more than a band. We'd become a mirror. A movement. A threat. Fire in the name. Music as weapon. We weren't entertainers anymore. We were soldiers with guitars. And every song we wrote was aimed straight at Babylon's heart. The deeper we went into the music, the more we realized this wasn't just about rhythm anymore. It was about resistance. We started out just trying to survive. But by the time the streets were singing our words louder than the radio did, we knew. We were dangerous. Our harmonies had turned into war cries. The bass lines? Rebellion in disguise. And every verse we wrote carried the weight of people who had nothing and still refused to bow. We weren't just the Wailing Wailers anymore. We dropped the prefix. We became the Wailers. Because we weren't just crying anymore. We were fighting. Songs like Small Axe. If you are the big tree, we are the small axe. That wasn't poetry. That was a threat. We were talking directly to the producers, the politicians, the system. Calling out injustice in the only language they didn't know how to censor. Music. We sang about the ghetto, about blackness, about Africa, about Rastafari. And that made people nervous. Especially when we stopped just hinting at it and started saying it outright. Peter would strum the guitar like he was casting spells. Bunny's voice would drop scripture between verses like he was channeling prophets. And Bob. He started writing songs that felt more like sermons than singles. Concrete Jungle. 400 Years. No More Trouble. Duppy Conqueror. Those songs weren't made for the radio. They were made for awakening. We were young, but we were clear. The music was no longer just sound. It was a weapon. But weapons bring enemies. The more powerful our message got, the more we felt it. Eyes on us, gatekeepers trying to push Bob to the front and push Peter and Bunny aside, dividing the harmony, separating the voices. But back then, we still stood strong. As three, we moved together, thought together. We lit the chalice together and reasoned about Babylon, about Haile Selassie, about Garvey, about the power of the African spirit trapped inside Jamaican skin. People called us radicals, rebels, even cultists. We didn't care. Because while other bands were singing about love and heartbreak, we were singing about freedom. And freedom doesn't make the charts. But it makes history. Babylon's offer, signing with Island Records. They said it was a door to the world. But it was also a wedge between us. We were on fire. The music was burning through the streets of Kingston. People were calling us the future of Jamaica's voice. But the system still acted like we didn't exist. Until Babylon came calling with a checkbook. Chris Blackwell. Island Records. A white man born in Jamaica, but raised in privilege. Someone who understood just enough of our fire to know how to sell it without getting burned. He had one thing we didn't. Access. To press. To money. To the white world. The world we couldn't reach from behind zinc fences. and he wanted to sign us. Not because he believed in Rastafari. Not because he saw the struggle. Because he saw a sound that could break borders. He saw us not as prophets, but as product. He handed us £4,000 to record an album. Real money. The kind we'd never seen before. At first, it felt like a blessing. We finally had studio time. Real instruments. Space to build something global. We recorded what would become Catch a Fire. An album that sounded like prophecy wrapped in flame. It had soul. Message. Anger. Pride. But then we started to feel the shift. The album cover didn't show all of us. Just Bob, lighting a spliff like a black James Dean. The marketing? It said Bob Marley and the Wailers. Not the Wailers. Not the Three. That was the beginning. The label saw Bob as the face. The voice. He was lighter skinned. Softer spoken. Easier to sell to white audiences who wanted rebellion, but not rage. Peter? Too militant. Too raw. Too fire. Bunny? Too spiritual. Too rooted in Rasta to compromise. And suddenly, without us knowing, they started carving the band down from the inside. Chris started booking Bob for solo interviews. Magazine covers started cropping the group. The contracts got more complicated. The sound got cleaner. The spotlight got narrower. And yet we kept singing. Because the mission was still there. The people still needed us. The struggle hadn't gone anywhere. But something else had entered the room. Silence. Not in the music, in the conversations between us. Where once there had been laughter, now there was tension. Where once we planned together, now we traveled apart. We all felt it. But none of us said it. Because saying it meant acknowledging that Babylon wasn't just outside anymore. It had stepped into the studio with us. Still, we pushed forward. Because the world was finally listening. And whether they knew our names or not, they were chanting our lyrics, from London to Lagos. But deep down, we knew something sacred was starting to crack. And soon it would break. Breach in the harmony, creative clashes and silent betrayals. When the sound gets too clean, you can't hear the pain anymore. And that's when the harmony starts to die. We didn't talk about it at first. Because we were still on stages, still making music, still shouting truth into microphones. But the thing was already happening. The separation. The silence. We had gone from boys in a yard, sharing boiled dumpling and laughter, to strangers on the same tour bus. It started subtle. Peter would show up late to rehearsals, his guitar slung like a weapon, his mouth heavy with things he didn't say. Bunny stopped smiling. He spent more time in meditation, fasting, reasoning with elders. Bob, he was always moving, always in meetings. Always surrounded by people who didn't know us, but claimed they knew what was best for him. Island Records had made their choice. They wanted Bob at the front, the face of reggae, the symbol of revolution sanitized for export. They said it was just branding. But branding has a cost. We felt it in the mixes. Peter's verses cut. Bunny's harmonies faded into the background. Even the lyrics started to change, more polished, more marketable. And yet we kept going. We released Burnin'. An album filled with fire, but burning from both ends. Get up, stand up. I shot the sheriff. Burnin' and Lutunda. The world heard power. We felt pain. Bob was singing louder than ever. But in the background, we were unraveling. Peter wanted more space to speak. His songs were militant, unapologetic. He didn't want a brand. He wanted a battlefield. He started asking hard questions about contracts, credits, pay. The answers didn't come. Only more shows. More Bob. Less Wailers. Bunny. He wanted clarity. He was deep in Rasta, deep in Itaal, deep in the path of spiritual cleansing. He began to feel that the industry was Babylon dressed in headphones and money. And Bob. He never betrayed us with words. But he didn't stop it either. Maybe he felt trapped. Maybe he believed he could carry the message alone. Maybe he was tired of the arguing, the division, the pressure to balance egos with expectation. But by the end of 1973, it was done. The tour was over. And so was the original harmony. Peter left. Bunny followed. No big fight. No explosion. Just distance, the kind you don't come back from. When we split, people said it was about ego. It wasn't. It was about identity. Three lions can't be caged in the same den forever. And yet, the pain never left. Because the industry didn't care. They had Bob now. Peter was a problem. Bunny was too Rasta. But the truth? Without all three of us, the fire didn't burn the same. Exodus without us, the break. They called it Bob's Rise. But for us, It felt like being left behind by a revolution we built. After the split, everything moved fast. Bob was everywhere, posters, press, stages across Europe and the US. The band name was still The Wailers, but it was no longer Our Wailers. Now it was Bob Marley and The Wailers. A new formation, a new sound, a new world. For us, Peter and Bunny, it was like watching your own house being repainted without your name on the deed. We didn't walk away from the message. We walked away from the machine, from the people who looked at our struggle and saw nothing but market potential. Bob had the spotlight, but we had something else. Clarity, conviction, and yes, bitterness. It's not that we stopped loving Bob. It's that the world erased our names and called it Progress. When Exodus dropped in 1977, we heard it everywhere. Natural Mystic, Waiting in Vain, Jamming, Exodus. We weren't surprised. We knew what Bob could do. We helped him build it. But hearing those songs, knowing the sound came from roots we all planted, and knowing the world had no idea who Peter or Bunny were, that cut deep. Peter would say it plain. They used the small axe to cut down the Wailers and called it pruning. He was right. Island Records pushed Bob as a solo revolutionary, but you can't separate a tree from its roots without weakening the whole forest. Meanwhile, we were on our own paths. Peter dropped Legalize It, then Equal Rights, Militant, Unfiltered, Pure Fire. His sound was rougher, less polished, and the message? Unapologetic. He called out police brutality. He shouted down political corruption. He became the Rasta the system couldn't tame, but he also became a target. Beaten, silenced, ignored by the very media that called Bob a reggae saint. And Bunny. Bunny disappeared into spiritual exile. He released Black Heart Man, an album the industry didn't know what to do with. It was too Rasta, too sacred, too real. He wasn't chasing fame. He was chasing truth. Meanwhile, Bob kept rising. Redemption Song became an anthem. Africa Unite. One Love. Could You Be Loved? The world called it a movement. We called it a movement without its council. The Wailers were never meant to be one man. We were a trinity. Three visions. Three voices. One fire. And yet, as Bob rose, so did reggae. So did consciousness. So did the reach of the message we all helped birth. So we watched. From a distance. Not as haters. As witnesses. As builders who were no longer allowed in the temple. It hurt. But we knew the revolution was still alive. Even if the world had forgotten where it came from. Solo paths, fire still burning. We walked away from the spotlight, but we never walked away from the fire. When the brotherhood broke, people thought we were finished. But we weren't done. We were just beginning to speak without interference. Peter Tosh didn't take the polite road. He kicked the doors of Babylon down. First with Legalize It, a declaration, not a plea. If you don't legalize herb, you criminalize creation. He didn't want to entertain. He wanted to expose. Systemic oppression. Police brutality. Western lies. He told journalists the Queen was a parasite. He stood on stages and said what the rest of the world whispered behind closed doors. He didn't care about applause. He wanted truth, even if it got him blacklisted. And it did. Beaten. Raided. Monitored. Peter became a marked man. But he never stopped. Equal Rights followed. Then Bush Doctor. Then Mystic Man. All of it, fire wrapped in rhythm. He toured. He spoke. He bled. And through it all, he reminded the world. I am not a singer. I am a sufferer using song to fight. Meanwhile, Bunny Wailer went in the opposite direction. Where Peter marched through the front lines, Bunny went into the hills. He fasted. He studied. He meditated. He believed the music had to come from purity, not performance. His solo debut, Black Heart Man, was a spiritual masterpiece. The industry didn't know what to do with it. Too conscious. Too mystical. Too uncompromising. But the people who needed it, they felt it in their bones. Bunny wasn't trying to be famous. He was trying to preserve the roots of the movement. He saw what was coming. How reggae was being packaged, commercialized, stripped of its Rasta core. So he became a guardian. A Black Heart Man who chose silence over stardom, truth over trend. We each chose our paths. Peter, the firebrand. Bunny, the sage. Bob, the bridge. And while the world saw Marley as the flag, they forgot the flagpole was built by three hands. We didn't always agree. We didn't always speak. But we all carried the same flame. And no matter how far apart we drifted, in rhythm, in politics, in spirit, one thing remained. The Wailers never stopped wailing. Marley's rise and fall, watching from the shadows. He rose to heights the three of us once dreamed of. But from the shadows, the spotlight looked different. When Bob started touring the world as Bob Marley and the Wailers, it felt like prophecy unfolding and pain settling in. We watched from a distance, not because we wanted to, because the system made sure we were kept out of the picture. The photos, the interviews, the billboards, all Bob. No mention of the Roots. No mention of the original harmony. And as he rose, higher than any of us imagined, we felt it. Pride, yes, but also something else. Loss. Because we didn't just build songs together. We built a movement. And now, the movement had a single face. We saw the crowds in Paris, London, New York, Addis Ababa, thousands chanting One Love, holding up lighters, crying over lyrics we once sang together in a Kingston alley. And we didn't hate him for it. Bob was always meant to carry the message further. He had the vision, the voice, the way of drawing people in. But we never stopped asking, what would it have looked like if we had stayed three? Peter watched from the fire, Bunny watched from the hills, and we both knew. The message was growing, but the truth was being edited. Then came 1976, the assassination attempt. Bullets. Blood. Bob, shot in his own home 2 days before the Smile Jamaica concert. We weren't there. We heard it from the streets. And we knew. Babylon was scared of him. Scared of what his voice could do. When he went on stage with a bullet still in his arm, we felt pride and a deeper ache. Because even after all that, Bob didn't stop. He left Jamaica, went to London, wrote Exodus, the album Time magazine would call the best of the 20th century. And we knew. He was no longer just Bob. He was Marley, a symbol. And symbols get lonely. When we finally saw him again, the man looked tired. Not in body. In spirit. The world saw success. We saw the weight. And when the news broke, cancer, we felt it like a punch to the chest. None of us ever sat down and cried together. That wasn't our way. But the silence between us got louder. We never got that final reunion. Not on stage. Not in harmony. And when he passed in 1981, it wasn't just a brother we lost. It was a part of ourselves. A part the world celebrated, but we remembered. We remembered the barefoot rehearsals. The jokes. The first joint shared under a mango tree. The moment our voices first locked together like prophecy. They buried him in 9 Mile, and the cameras followed. The leaders came. The world mourned. And we remembered that before Marley was a legend, he was a Wailer. Reflections, what was broken, what survived. Time didn't heal the wounds, but it taught us how to live with the scars. After Bob passed, the world crowned him king. Statues went up. Murals appeared on every continent. Documentaries. Tribute albums, museums, and we watched, not with hatred, not with jealousy, with something more complex, something that only brothers turned witnesses can understand, because we knew the full story, not the myth, the man. We knew his laughter, his fears, his stubbornness, his loyalty, his silences, and we knew what we had built, together. But the story the world heard rarely had room for Peter or Bunny. We became footnotes in a legend we co-wrote. Sometimes it stung. Bunny once said in an interview, they rewrote the history to fit the brand. But history don't forget its architects. Peter was more direct. I'm no backup singer in the revolution. We each carried it differently. Peter turned his fire into activism. He stayed loud, angry, uncompromising, until 1987, when they silenced him for good. Home invasion. Gunshots. Gone. A revolutionary gunned down not in protest, but in betrayal. Jamaica wept. But too late. And Bunny, he carried the silence. For years, he rarely spoke publicly. When he did, it was with reverence and rage. He kept the flame alive through music, through Nyabingi drums, through resistance in exile. He once said, reggae is not entertainment. It is a divine calling. It is prophecy in bass and word. He never chased fame. He chased purity. We outlived Bob. We outlived the headlines. But we never outlived the question. What would have happened if we stayed together? Some nights, that question still haunts. But the truth is, even broken, the Wailers never died. Our songs still echo in revolutions. Our faces still show up in murals, sometimes together, sometimes cropped. Our harmonies, fractured as they were, still stir hearts in Brazil, South Africa, Berlin, Kingston. People think the story ended in '73. But it never ended. Because every time someone sings Get Up, stand up, or small acts, or put it on. They're singing us, not just Bob, not just Peter, not just Bunny, us, the Wailers. Three voices, one fire, still burning. One band, three prophets, the legacy of the Wailers. We didn't just make music. We made a sound that wouldn't die, even when we did. By the end of it all, the world knew the name Bob Marley. Some knew Peter Tosh. A few knew Bunny Wailer. But fewer still knew the Wailers, the Trinity. Three voices, three visions, one sound that changed the soul of the earth. We didn't just sing songs. We built a rhythm that could carry revolution, comfort the broken, and confront empires. Our harmonies were carved from hardship. Our truths, filtered through the smoke of herb and history. Our message, passed like scripture from Kingston to Cairo, Soweto to Stockholm. We weren't perfect. We fought. We split. We said things we couldn't unsay. But what we built, that survived all of us. The Wailers laid the foundation for Small Orange Diamond Reggae as resistance. Small Orange Diamond Rastafari as global consciousness. Small Orange Diamond Black Identity as power, not shame. Small Orange Diamond Jamaica as prophecy, not just paradise. Peter spoke for the angry, the militant, the ones who burned down the master's house. Bunny sang for the spiritual, the quiet warriors, the ones who kept the scriptures safe. Bob carried the bridge, between worlds, between wounds, between war and unity. We were different branches, but the same tree. Now the world teaches Marley in schools. They license our lyrics to brands. They remix our chants into dance tracks. And still, the root survives. Because every youth who rises up and sings against injustice, every woman who wears locks as a crown, every child who grows up knowing one love before they can spell Babylon, they are part of us. The world tried to pick a favorite. But legacy doesn't live in categories. Legacy lives in impact. And ours. It's sung at protests, played at funerals, blasted in ghettos and universities alike. We didn't just tell people to stand up. We showed them how. We didn't just chant down Babylon. We gave the oppressed a language of survival. Even now, Peter is gone. Bob is gone. Bunny has returned to the ancestors. But the Wailers? Still wailing. In every beat. In every banner. In every breath of someone who refuses to be silenced. So if you remember nothing else, remember this. The Wailers were not a band. We were the sound of the storm before the awakening. And that sound still echoes.